Episode 6, Esther. She stands, 5'9", erect, straight-backed, big-boned, yet slender-framed. Dark brown eyes with a bright, piercing gaze. Flared nostrils, when provoked. Thick black hair that she first plaits, then perms, then covers almost permanently with headscarves. She has large, powerful hands, strong, spindly fingers. She can pour boiling hot soup into the palm of her cupped hand to taste, without flinching. She looks much younger than her age, until her health problems start to take over. She can easily place the whole of her palms on the floor without bending her knees, up until her early 70s. Way up there on the list of Esther's skills is talking. Talking she seemed capable of talking without ever needing to breathe. I would sometimes watch her very closely, barely blinking, while she spoke, to try to see when, if, she took a breath during her seamless verbal streams. But there was never any physical clues, no telltale signs of breathing. It was particularly impressive when she was in raging rant mode, as if possessed. Where did she get the energy from? Even when she became frail and poorly, she could still talk the hind legs off a drove of donkeys. When I move abroad, and we speak on the phone, in the days when long-distance calls cost a fortune, the cost doesn't deter her. She considers 1 hour just a quick call. At the end of 2 hours, when I haven't been able to get a word in edgewise the whole time, and she says we have been speaking too long, and next time we have to start with me talking.
Because you never say anything, she says,
accusingly, quite seriously. After hanging up, my ears, head and mind all ache. I sit for a while and stare at the wall, and the wall just stares back at me, silently. Once during a 2-hour call, out of sheer frustration, I throw the cordless phone against the wall. Its case springs open, sending the 2 batteries and plastic flying across the room. You might well have done the same. My frustration, not anger, comes from not being able to exchange even a few words, like in a real conversation. It feels as though she is speaking to me as if I were a dead person. I'm happy to be the good listener, most of the time, but there are limits. I push the batteries back in and tape the cover down to keep them in place. When I put the phone to my ear, guess what? She was still talking, hadn't even noticed what must have been a very loud bang. During my primary school years, she's up early, getting my breakfast ready. These school day breakfasts are massive sizzling fry-up feasts of eggs, bacon, fried tomatoes, luncheon meat, baked beans, enough to keep me going for a couple of hours. Then she dashes off to work. It's Saturday afternoon. She's decided not to make me take laxatives today. It's a Saturday sans cenopods, the bowel-cleaning beverage that usually leaves me housebound for half the day. Instead, I'll go with her to Brixton Market. We'll meander through the crowded arcades. She'll bargain and banter with Lenny the Butcher and tell him he's cheeky, and he'll wrap up a couple of freebie chops or briny pink pigtails and hand me the bundles. And we will move on, past Merlin's Caribbean hair products stall, with lustrous curly wigs displayed on long-necked white styrofoam dummy heads, on the way to the fishmongers for some salt mackerel and jackfish. The fishmongers, who is, surprisingly, one of the handful of original businesses that will survive future Uber gentrification. If Esther were around years later, her bright eyes would boggle seeing what became of her Brixton Market, with its hipsters and tripsters, themed eateries, local brewed craft beers and brunches, and vegan cuisine. In her day, there are just a few perfectly fine, greasy cafes, where donkey-jacketed working men could get a nice eggs, bangers and bacon sandwich, with the butter threatening to seep through the paper-white processed bread and wash it down with a mug of sugary, milky tea. We'll squeeze through the crowd to the fruit and veg stall for yams as big as thighs, okras, plantains, green bananas. And then Irma's stall, where we'll pick up sundry groceries, not forgetting the cornmeal, indispensable for porridge, Jamaican-style pudding, crispy fried fritters, tern cornmeal, the Caribbean cousin of polenta. And then we'll head back home. She'll sit soaking her poor, cracked and calloused feet in a large white enamel basin, in my pee that she has been carefully storing in a bottle during the week. She believes, like other West Indians, that child pee has special healing properties. It's also less smelly than adults. Here's a photo of Esther. It's only a little larger than a passport photo. The colours are muted, veering towards sepia. I'm guessing it's from the 60s. She wears a dark brown, short-sleeved, knitted top with extra broad collars, spreading all the way out to the shoulders. Over her arm, she carries a thick, pale blue and cream striped cardigan. At the bottom edge of the photo, the extremely wide waistband of the top of her skirt is visible. She stands, head slightly angled to one side, smiling. Behind her is some kind of grand, monumental building, Westminster-ish. I'm curious about who captured this instant. She's presumably on her way to or returning from work. She works for a paltry weekly pay packet. She does not yet show the signs of wear and tear, of depletion, damage, deterioration, depreciation, or consumption. Consumption is yet to come. And this is another item from my mother's things that I ended up holding onto. A creased, crumbling, brown, with age, black and white TV license payment receipt. From March 1970 for £6. Valid for only 1 year. But among her papers, 40 years on. Can't be too careful, can you? You never know what might come in handy the minute, or decade, you've thrown it away. She's kept these outdated bills, receipts and prescriptions for decades, folded and wrapped in thin, transparent food sachets. Every piece of paper, every piece of clothing that has spent any time in her bedroom is impregnated, like a signature, with the clovey, heady fragrance of her Morgan's hair pomade. I once bought her an accordion folder, but the concept was far too organised for her. It would have made it too easy for nosy Parkers to go through her papers, to methodically learn all her secrets. Instead, she prefers her own organised disorder. Her filing system consists of piles of plastic bags and sachets bursting with papers scattered around the room, occupying every surface. She dissimulates booby-trap notes, her scattery handwriting scrawled messily on scraps of paper or the backs of envelopes, amongst her papers, advising the finder, my brother or his father, that they would be better off reading the bloody Bible, or doing something useful around the damn house, or just going to hell. The day will come when my brother and I will have to wade through the ocean of papers, but some of the booby-trap notes will make us smile. Also among the few documents I kept is an employer's annual certificate for the year 1983. It's a carbon copy on pale green paper that the employee is requested to keep indefinitely. It's stamped the Savoy Hotel Laundry. At the top right-hand corner is printed, Do Not Destroy. Ironically, this is the place where Esther's health is ultimately destroyed. She's paid a pittance for working in pitiful conditions, with almost no respect for health and safety. By the time we discover the true cause of her joint pains and weak spells, tuberculosis, the white plague, has already spread from her lungs to her bones. We don't know if Esther caught the disease before or while working at the hotel laundry, but we do know the harsh sweatshop-like conditions have taken a toll on her health. Another nail. She'll soon become a regular patient at the local hospital's haematology departments and test the staff's patience to the limit. A specialist doctor's letter, or fan mail, as she calls the hospital's correspondence, regularly landing on the doormat, in 2003 reads, CT abdo, pelvis, pre and post IV contrast-enhanced scans of the abdomen and pelvis were performed. The kidneys were imaged in two phases. There is posterior cortical scarring and calcification affecting the left mid-kidney.
There is a speck of calcium in the spleen. There are calcified right paraaortic abdominal nodes.
Conclusion.
The overall appearance suggests old TB.
The only words that matter are old TB.